We'll begin. Our Father in heaven, I ask that you'll guide our conversation today, that as we say the principles of health that you have taught and how you've developed them in this church, that we would learn something about how to live now and in the near future. And I ask for this gift in the name of Jesus. Amen. Who remembers something from the chapter that you read? There was a lot in there. Mr. Risley.
Ellen White recommended that James do some activity.
All right, so when James became sick, and James had a series, like strokes in his life, he was taken to Danville to the Dr. Troll's place of getting better. And did Dr. Troll have a lot of good ideas? He had a lot of good ideas. Dr. Jackson, thank you. Dr. Jackson had a lot of good ideas. One of those ideas, though, was that too much religion creates all kinds of health problems. And so Dr. Jackson would prescribe for too much religion, playing cards, going to theater, having a general non-religious social fun time. Also, complete rest from all sorts of useful labor. Not meaning just bed rest, but, you know, anything like playing board games would be just up his alley. What was Ellen White shown in contrast to this? That activity was good for us. That people who are too sick to be very active ought to be lightly active. And in that she anticipated the discoveries of modern science. Remember something else from what you read? Mr. Long. All right. Almost not just related to health reform, but as a general principle. Ellen White was shown things after the church had arrived at them by the means God prefers than revelation. What does God prefer we do? Use our heads. Study. Does that make revelation meaningless? What did revelation do for us? And it did more than confirm. It confirmed selectively, so that where our the men we were following might be going the wrong way, inspiration goes the right way. For example, Dr. Jackson was recommending a no-salt diet. So what did he recommend? He recommended whole grains, eating fruits and vegetables, dispensing with cheese, dispensing with meat, using no tobacco, using no alcohol, all these good things, plus he recommended no salt. If Ellen White was dependent on him for her truth, she would have followed him in his truths as well as his error. But if she was dependent on a higher source, she would have followed him where he was right and then left company with him where he was wrong. You know, you can tell that as a teacher, people are cheating. If I think that you're cheating, I'm going to compare your paper to the person that I think you're cheating from. If you get the same ones right as she does, I won't think anything of it. But if you get the same ones wrong, in the same way she got them wrong, I'll know you're cheating. Mr. Farrister. Okay, exactly. I mean, the first thing she was shown, she was okay with. Like the no alcohol, no tobacco. As far as we know, she never used any of those. But when it came down to no meat, Ellen White's experiential view of eating is that meat is the source of being full, satisfied. It makes the food taste good. Basically, everything else is garnish for the meat, and the meat is the meat of the thing. Don't we even talk that way today? I almost talked like a commercial. And And so when she went off meat, what did she replace the meat with? Yeah. And I was given a hint, but couldn't see it. Thank you. Mr. Risley is reminding me that I said something about coming back to neglected visions. So I'm pausing our health reform lecture for 45 seconds. James White became so irritated at the accusations of anti-Seventh-day keeping Adventist. They would say, you get your doctrines from Ellen White. You get your doctrines from your wife. And your wife gets them sometimes from you. So you're just a little circular thing. And it's not from the Bible. So James White, for a period of time, stopped publishing Ellen White's visions. Now, this is before radio and before television. So if her visions aren't being published, they're not being used. Does that make any sense to you, what I'm just saying? And what happened when he stopped publishing her visions in the church papers? Exactly. It came to the point where she thought her work for the church was done, which to her would be a whew. Anyway, it wasn't to be so, and health reform is part of what changed all that. Resuming our original lecture. There is something else in your chapter. Okay, dress is addressed in this chapter. I was on an anti-Ellenite website last week. Sometimes I just go to them just to make sure that nothing's changed. And it was accusing Ellen White on the basis of her inconsistency in regard to dress. It quoted that at one point she was saying that we should have dresses that clear the filth of the street by an inch or two. And then it quoted another statement where it said that they should be 8 or 9 inches off the floor. And it was urging that these are obviously contradictory. Silly, ignorant publisher. To clear the filth on the streets where horses are riding, where rain is coming on muddy streets in modern day 18th century, 19th century, you need to have 8 or 9 inches off the floor to clear the filth by an inch or two. Do you understand? Yeah. But Ellen White did make a change in relation to the Reformed dress. Okay, let's just fill out the Reformed dress for an issue. The idea of a different dress for women was very apparent at the Health Institute where they went. There, and you probably have pictures of this in your book. Of the American costume. It looks just like a lady wearing pants with a miniskirt over it. That's my memory of the thing, but if we can find the picture quick, and if not, you'll see it eventually. You got pictures. Yeah, this is a little different. The lady, is she smoking in this picture? Oh, no, that's not the one. Let's see. Yeah, these are nicer than the ones, I think, in the same book. They have the ones I'm thinking of. Doom, doom. So, a picture of Mrs. Austin, Dr. Austin, 1851, wearing her pants with a dress over it. Which, that design there is pretty similar to the one that Ellen White ended up recommending. Just a few inches shorter, the skirt, than the one Ellen White ended up recommending. Still wearing what? Because it's Dr. Austin, I would doubt it. Because she was really against those. So, when Ellen White began to recommend a change in dress, what were the principles involved that came through in vision? One of them was hygiene, not to collect manure and wet stuff on your dress, and also not to have cold, wet stuff touching your ankles. Because what happens when your ankles get chilled? your circulation through your toes and capillaries is restricted, and so the circulation for the lower extremity of your body is restricted, and you end up having a much slower reflex to disease. You get sick. Yeah, that was part of it. And there was a few other issues. One of them was modesty, because the bloomers that were worn underneath hoop skirts often became visible when ladies had to get through doors that were made before hoop skirts were popular, because they turned them up sideways to get through. Yes. No. You're something else from what you... Oh, and so finishing that, Elmite changing her view. Health is so important, but the fourth angel's message going to the world is so much more important than ladies having a certain style of dress, that when dress began to take center stage, God's counsel was to drop it. Not that principle had changed, but it's still true today. You'll find people who dress is the big issue in their mind, and there are a few issues that ought to take less precedence in our life than this one. There is something else of what you read. Yes.
What happened to Dr. Russell?
Dr. Russell, when he was sort of pushed out by those who were bringing in Dr. White, ended up going to close to Ann Arbor. Is it Ypsilanti? Is that what it says in your... I think it was Ypsilanti that he went to. And he started there a hydrotherapy program. That's the end of my knowledge of his story. Yes?
Just looking at the way he was dressing, I thought it was very interesting. When I was at GYC, I took a class on women's joint thing, and I found it interesting that she mentioned here about having this woman to adopt the style and the statement of spiritualists. Because during that time, the way you presented that, during most of the women that were leading up this movement of women's rights were all spiritualists. And so she was kind of a little...
Absolutely. Spiritualists have often been on the vanguard of good reforms. Is there obvious reasons why? I mean, not that the devil wants to reform the world, but he would love to get God's people confounded with spiritualists. Just that type of association. And that's what vegetarianism does for us today. Anyway, don't let the devil manipulate you by his tactics. Let me guide your memory some so I can go the direction I want to with this lecture. So Ellen White, her family suffered from, was it a diphtheria epidemic? I think most of you probably get... when you were younger, probably had shots to make sure you would never get diphtheria. A disease that doesn't tend to go around anymore that used to really kill a lot of young people.
I got the idea it might be some of the stomach reading this chapter.
That's dyspepsia.
Oh.
But diphtheria ended up catching Ellen White's two of her children. And what did she do to help them out? Okay, you're thinking tuberculosis, which is a little after this in the story. It's a little before that. Exactly that. She just gave them basic stuff, what they needed, and they recovered. But she was following a prescription by another man, a doctor who had written in a health journal about a proper way to treat these kind of diseases. She followed that regimen, and it worked for her. So she began treating others that way. Then her children, Henry and Willie, in that order, came down with pneumonia. That's right, came down with pneumonia. And so they had a trusted physician. Ellen White had a trusted physician, and they put that physician to work, and Henry died. Almost as soon as he died, Willie got pneumonia. As a mother, would that make you panicky? I was around here when Chester got pneumonia and got very sick with it. and was 1,000 miles away from his mother. I saw something about how people are when their children get pneumonia and are really sick with it. So what did Ellen and Willie do in that second stage, second situation? Yeah, they went for simple things they could do at home. And they took counsel. God gave them help. And Willie recovered. Was it the diphtheria or the pneumonia where she was shown that they were being stifled by the air in their room and needed fresh air? Pneumonia. Okay, so there she had experience, let in the fresh air. I bet a lot of us now don't get enough fresh air because of our fear about wasting central heat. You know, when you have a wood stove, opening a window doesn't seem too bad. The stove stays warm, and you go, you know, it works out. But when you're using central heat, it feels like a real waste of money to open a window. We kept our window open until we went on vacation. And when we got back, we have not remembered to open it yet. Do you remember anything in your chapter about John Harvey Kellogg? Okay, John Harvey Kellogg, what was he going to be? He's going to be a teacher. Did he end up being a teacher? Yeah, a lot of people are like that. They don't want to be something. They want to be a teacher. But anything you do well, you're going to end up teaching. Are pastors teachers? Are doctors teachers? Are nurses teachers? Accountants might not be teachers. So John Harvey Kellogg was sent to be trained at the Health Institute. He came back, ended up replacing Dr. Russell. And when he first became the physician in charge, what kind of changes happened immediately at the Western Health Reform Institute in Battle Creek? Yeah.
A bunch of people decided that Dr. Kellogg was too young, so they left.
All right, so the 20 people, how many? Was it 6 that went to Ypsilanti? And then 2 just plumb quit. And how'd he... Huh? 12 left out of 20.
12 were still there.
That's what I was just saying, yeah. 6 left and 2 left, and I left 12. Good. And Mr. Kellogg also did some other changes. What do you do with the magazine? Did you notice that he was pretty good with public relations? From health reformer to good health, and he invented a word. What word did he invent? And you know, it served the church well for many decades. It's sort of out now. In Australia, it's still in? What's it called? Oh, I didn't know that. What was his reason for changing the names? Yeah, they wanted to be improved. Because people do go through phases, you know? And what kind of phase were they going through in the 40s? They wanted to be reformed. What were they going through in the 60s? Wanted to be improved. Reform seemed kind of like, yeah. And we ought to be on the ball like that. This is one advantage of having young people in charge of things. Young people are much more flexible to roll with the changes going on. I'm thinking of the websites that are like big now. Not many of them were started by people in their 50s or are owned by people in their 50s. Or in their 40s, for that matter. So Kellogg, with begging, accepted the position of being in charge. on the condition that he would only be there for 1 year. And so how long was he there? Until he died, he was there. And that was a long time. Let's go back in our story to before Kellogg was known. In the 1830s, there was some health reforming going on among a non-Adventist. Yeah, Joseph Bates. So Joseph Bates did not like being controlled. Poor Joseph Bates had had some rough times, like in the War of 18... Let's see, that one couldn't make sense that it was 1812. He was, what did you say? He was 50 and 40s. Maybe he was a very young man at that point. Very young man. So as a very young man in one of the wars, he was taken captive as an American and just held. It's a British prisoner of war for some time. Brother Bates gave up alcohol. Did he give it up permanently when he first gave it up? Kind of an up and down experience for him. You ever know anyone like that with trying to change their life? So you should know that doesn't mean it's hopeless. But eventually he realized that he was looking forward to that one glass more than he was looking forward to his nourishment in the meal. And that was a hint to him that something was out of balance. It was an enemy. If it was holding him like that, he got rid of it. What was the next thing he noticed like that? Yeah, he went to a party. And at the party, he was given some really strong tea. He drank it, went home, laid down, and just thought. Couldn't sleep. They concluded that tea was an enemy and coffee and gave them up. He wasn't even a Christian yet. In between those times, he and a friend decided to give up tobacco. In 1843 and 44, the last year he expected to be here on earth, he became a vegetarian that didn't use cheese and didn't use butter. Was that the end of Joseph Bates' reforming? So come now to post-1844, the disappointment. He doesn't go back in everything. Now the world's going to last much longer. Does he now start spreading the ham and eggs on his... No, he even becomes more abstemious. To the point that he decides to live on bread and water. You see, Joseph Bates is kind of a biblical guy. And the Bible talks about bread being the staff of life. Now, is bread and water the very best diet? You know, it's not round enough. But it's better than a lot of diets. And he didn't get sick on it. But eventually added some fuller things in. What was it that people noticed, the young people working around this 55-year-old, what did they notice about him? Yeah, the guy had good posture, good health. He could walk firmly, and he wasn't getting sick every few weeks because these young guys that were intellectual brains, like Loughborough and Andrews and James, were often being prostrated by illness. Think, cannot think at all. Think. Oh, what'd you say? And you know, it was not becoming for people doing God's work. How was Joseph Bates different? Stable. Do you remember anything about Haskell in this? Maybe he wasn't named in the section about him. Okay, you read about him. What do you remember about swine's flesh? All right, in fact, there were some Adventists that were condemning it. One of them was Haskell. Haskell was doing it on the basis of Leviticus 11. It just looked to him as plain and simple, and from Isaiah, where God condemns those that eat the, was it the mouse in Isaiah? And that looked to him like unclean meats were still valid. You can look in the story in the book of Acts. Peter, as a Christian, says, I'm not going to eat those unclean things. Of course, that's an illustration to say that we shouldn't call any person unclean, but it looks like it's still enforcing. Peter still believed in not eating unclean meats. So Haskell began teaching that. James White thought that that was a bit extreme, to not eat pigs. Then Ellen White wrote about it in the first volume of the Testimonies. I think your book doesn't give a reference there, but you can find it in the first volume. And this is also urged as an argument against Ellen White's inspiration. Did she say, and your book quoted the entire relevant passage, did she say in what was quoted that swine's flesh was good to eat? No. In fact, she surely left the door open for God to remove it from our diet. What'd she say about it? He'll do it. Exactly. In other words, we're not going to go off on individual tangents and make our own little doctrines of what is and isn't acceptable to be part of God's remnant church. If she had not dealt with that, then we could have congregationalism and health reform. You couldn't join the Amity Church unless you agreed not to use baking soda. But in Bonnerdale, no, I can't say these things. So, so Ellen White rejected congregationalism version of health reform. And then she was eventually shown about pigs herself. Haskell took that graciously, by the way. Remember anything else from your chapter? Yeah. Okay, so our sanitarium was not intended to be a capital program. Like, we'll fund the church via the sanitarium. God intended that the sanitarium would be a service. Did Jesus charge for his services? Then why do we charge for ours?
We have to keep the bills paid somehow.
That's true. Jesus operated without capital. I mean, without, what do you call it? Overhead is a good word for what I'm thinking. Yeah, thank you. But, yeah, to make it inexpensive is a great thing to do. You're saying something.
I was just going to say that people were always willing to house both Jesus' 12 disciples and the followers, and so they took care of it expenses in that way, rather than paying him money for service.
Something that really wasn't addressed directly in your chapter, but was addressed well indirectly, was a book that's been written called Ellen White, Prophetess of Help. How many of you have heard of this book, Ellen White, Prophetess of Help? It's not a good book. The summary is that that book says that it's making an unbiased investigation because Ellen White said that she wrote out her health reform views before she read the articles on health being published in the various journals. Do you recall reading that in your chapter? And the man who wrote that book concluded that that had to be a significant exaggeration. You should know that I already gave you the evidence that proves that it was an honest statement. That was Ellen White's difference on the issues that were wrong in the journals that she was accused of depending on. So a question people might ask is, how did those other guys come to all those positions? It really looks like in the Great Awakening, when people were depending on God for help, that God really did teach a lot of people a lot of things. Most of the reforms advocated by Adventism were advocated during the 1840s by groups that were very Christian. Does God need to use a prophet to teach us his will? Unless we're very dull, and you can tell most of us are, because most of us wouldn't have come to those conclusions without a prophet, but someone did come to them. Do you remember anything else from your chapter? Yeah. Okay, it started out that way, and then it went away from that, and we were using ignorant pastors writing on health, and then we ended up going back some. That did not last forever. As soon as we had our own physicians, we became very dependent on our own physicians, and God did what he wanted to do all along. Our physicians became the most prominent physicians in the treatment of the sick. In other words, we became the head and not the tail. You were going to say something, Tara.
She just kind of talked to the questions with my group about how many thoughts we're having adverse effects completely. And just kind of, she talked a little bit about just how she feels like we're just kind of like what we do in the body and the way we treat it and what we eat and things like that. The way we think has a lot to do with our health.
This is a super development from Ellen White's writings. The connection of the mind to the body. If you want to read a section that is profound on this, you'll find it in Mind, Character, and Personality. Stronger than anywhere else I've read. I've learned a lot going over it in the last week. So thinking gloomy thoughts set you up for disease. There's another book you ought to know the name of, The Story of Our Health Message. It's a book I recommend reading. It's just really great, and you learn a lot. However, there's something in this book that you'll find, it was also in your chapter, that this book treats in a nearly humorous way. It's the article called Appeal to Mothers. In your book, you remember Appeal to Mothers, the main thing your textbook mentions is that it was an attack on masturbation. Really, that's what it is. You read it in here, you'll think that it was about a lot of other things. It never says what it's not about. It just lists some other things that you can find in it. Mr. Robinson, who was a relative of Ellen White. Let's talk for a minute about Appeal to Mothers. It's another place where Ellen White is accused of being just utterly unreliable. In that book, she attributes to what she calls secret vice, solitary vice in other places. She attributes to that smaller heads, tumors, insanity, to name a few things, lethargy, inattention, a lack of desire for spiritual things. And in fact, the list of symptoms, if you put them all together, it'd be hard to find a young person that didn't have one of them, which is often used to mock her. But it's no mockery at all. That's how it is with a number of systematic illnesses. How can I illustrate it where you can just see it? If I were to ask you, what are the illnesses that can result from overeating? You know, you could just about say anything, because it causes a few fundamental problems that themselves cause all kinds of other problems. And does it mean that everyone that overeats ends up getting heart attack or diabetes or tumors or insanity? No, but overeating certainly causes are such a contributing factor to most illnesses we deal with today. I pick overeating because in some ways it is parallel to masturbation. It's an overindulgence of legitimate appetite. And does overindulgence of the legitimate appetite for food cause problems? It causes so many problems. So how do people accuse Ellen White of being off her rocker on this topic? First, they show that in her day, it was common for people to condemn this practice as being unhealthful. And they show that she does it too. Then they come down to the present and show that now modern science has shown that it's not unhealthful. And you can take 100 psychiatrists and psychologists and physicians and ask all 300 of them what they think, and almost all of them are going to tell you there's nothing wrong with it, and a few will tell you they don't know. Obviously, Ellen White was dependent on the wisdom of her times. And if I could enforce what Miss Jenna Lynn just said, I remember talking to Dr. Nedley about this. And he's a physician. I thought I'd ask him his opinion. He told me something so interesting. He said that in all of the history of science that he has gone into, and if you just look at the back of his books, you'll know that he researches research. And as he looks up studies and finds what's been done on topics, there have only been done one study, one double-blind study on the effects of masturbation. Only one in all history. It was done in the 19th century and showed a direct correlation between masturbation and mental disease. Then the next question he posed is, well, then why did everyone's position change? It wasn't based on study. It was based on a development of Freudian concepts of psychology. Not by analytical data, but by taking a fundamental belief and taking it to its conclusion. So which side is on the side of blind science? Ellen White is. You got to know that. Do you remember anything else from your chapter? So the introduction to your chapter was apparently written in 1875, something like that, but was a good picture of earlier than that. What they show? They show a baby has just died. Two men are talking about it, and one of them says, I heard your baby died. The other guy says, yes, poor thing. We had four doctors, and we bled it, and we put leeches on its temples, and we covered it all over with mustard, and we gave it several powderings with calomel, and after just a week's illness, it died. He didn't talk about it there, but there's a reason why they said it died. Or he died, and there's no name involved. Like today we'd say, we'd use a name. Many people did not name their babies until they were months old. Some until they were a year or 2 years old. Because infant mortality was so high. They just say baby, the baby. That introduction is also helpful to help you see that if we say Ellen White is dependent on her sources, that we have to give her the very best of credit for how choosy she was regarding her sources. You see that she could have chosen the wrong sources and presented a lot of very goofy stuff. Sylvester Graham, who was he?
He was somebody that advocated using a diet
if the man was resurrected today, went to Walmart, and was taken to an aisle and shown, "You're Dr. Graham? Look, in honor of you, we've invented Graham crackers." How would he feel about it when he looked at their ingredients? Change the name? Yeah, exactly. That's exactly. Because he was advocating unrefined foods. Did your chapter deal at all with fanaticism? Who was it that began going to extremes? Dr. Trawl had the opinion that we should go off of sugar. I'm sure it was based on his and salt. Sugar and salt. I'm sure it was based on his research there at the home. Could we say he was right that too much salt and too much sugar is bad for you? Certainly those things mess up health. But he went to the extreme of absolute cutting out. So your book brings out why this caused problems for our magazine. Where did most of our subscribers live? Live in the Midwest. So you live in the Midwest, and you talk about global warming. I tell you, it's been going on for a lot longer than people talk about it. It was much colder in the 19th century than it is today. Winters were much worse. So you're going a long winter, no fruits, no... few vegetables. Like, you might have potatoes and squash, because they keep really well. Does that keep really well? Sauerkraut. I mean, you can make it keep. But what they're really living on is dairy and meat. And if you cut out meat, it's rough stuff. Sarah, you can learn something there about how fast to advocate principles. As fast as the people can follow. I remember when I was in Lithuania that a person had gone there who began advocating a vegan diet and taught them recipes that used yeast flakes and tofu as fundamentals. Lithuania, where you will not find a store that has yeast flakes, nor one that has tofu. And we just got some really good news in this class. He probably met Southwestern. Let me summarize and finish what we're doing, because none of us are going to be able to think about anything else for the next few minutes. Health reform came into our church through study by individuals. But typically, what would happen is you'd have a large body with a few people who are health-minded and many that aren't. Yet our denomination has become known for health from one end to the other. That is because of the spirit of prophecy. Ellen White's contribution was to take what would be symptomatic of a few reform-minded individuals and make it denomination-wide. And as the alpha of apostasy came through the channels of the health reform, the omega of apostasy seems to be following a similar track. We'll talk about that at some other time. You are dismissed.